Hey, everybody, welcome to Hammer Down on the Market Scale Podcast Network. My name is Mike Bush. And if this is the first time joining your show, I want to say thank you first off. The idea behind Hammer Down is really simple. I think supply chain is a cool, cool industry. I think we do a ton of cool stuff. I think we do a terrible job of promoting it. This is a trillion-dollar industry where when you look around your house, everything was created, everything was manufactured, and everything showed up in a truck. And as an industry, we suck at touting how great all of those accomplishments are. So the idea was, let's start a show. Let's bring on some of the most interesting people in freight and connect them with an audience of people who might be thinking about our industry. And when it comes to people who are interesting and comes to people who are connectors, one man stands above the rest. He's Robert Bain, the strongest man in freight. Robert, welcome to the show, brother, man.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. That's quite the intro. I don't know if I can back that up, man.
Listen, I tend to be hype man for these. I had Liz Ward on a couple episodes ago over from Zbox, and she asked, hey, will you go everywhere I go and start introducing me into the rooms I'm going to walk into? So we're working on that as a side hustle for me.
I like that. I could use a town crier for myself too. Like, I don't know like what would be said, but it'd be kind of cool to have that.
The what would be said is really interesting, man. So your career, I'm going to just jump right into it. Your career is fascinating to me in that there's three sides of things I've learned about you over time. One, you're like a hell of a podcaster, man. You've got what, four or five different shows you've been a part of and spearheaded. Yep. And as we were talking offline before we started, you basically are scheduled to be on every podcast under the sun. Second to that, the brand name, The Strongest Man in Freight. And how much do you bench?
Well, first of all, bench is stupid, so I'll be very clear on that. But yeah, most in competition is 6'10". Most in training, I've touched 705 with my shirt, and then I think I've done like 755 in my competition shirt off a two board. And there's a training apparatus called a band shirt. I did 925 that I touched my chest with that. That's just kind of an exhibition thing. I don't like the band shirts, but yeah. So I've had some pretty big weights in my hands.
Okay. And then finally, you're also a freight guy who's gone kind of back and forth on the operations side between in-house carriers, brokerages, and consultancy. Is that fair?
Yeah. I've sat in just about every operational seat you could think of.
Okay. Why? Like, tell me about this. What attracted you to this? Why, man?
I do love telling this story. So I grew up in Northern Virginia, moved to Eastern Iowa, and went to college there. I went to college for three reasons. I wanted to play soccer, party, and find somebody to marry. So it was a great experience for me. While in high school, I started working in restaurants because it was easy to get a job there in high school. Two, I love food. I developed a love for entertaining people. There is something very cool about connecting two people through cuisine. And I love doing that. The problem with that is, typically, if you work in the restaurant industry, your nights, your weekends, your holidays, those are taken up by the store. And I didn't like that. My wife and I had kids young. We were 19 and 20. We got pregnant with our first kids. So I wanted to be around for my kids. At least I wanted to take them to soccer games or whatever they were going to do. I wanted to have weekends. I wanted to do vacations. Like, I didn't want to live the restaurant life for the rest of my life. So I went looking for an office job. I did not know what logistics was. I didn't care what it was. And I had an interview, and it was funny because I walked in and the guy that was interviewing me, he and I played soccer as each other in high school, and we hated each other, absolutely hated each other. And he had no intention of hiring me, but just wanted to go through the process because, he was just interviewing folks. And during the interview, this organization moved cars, and they did some private moves, but usually for like high-end customers. They did a lot of stuff for like the auction houses, the repo yards, dealerships. So one of the ladies that worked with some of the high-end clients, as we walked by her desk, we overheard this conversation, and she's talking about moving and Mercedes SLR McLaren. So this is back, almost 20 years ago. When these first hit the market, these things, and they're still expensive, they were on the secondary market for a couple million dollars. And so this is a very expensive vehicle. And I looked over because I heard that. I like exotic cars. I think they're fun. And I see an AMG 63 on the screen, a stock photo, got the MSRP on there. Like, that's not the vehicle you're talking about. I said that out loud. I probably shouldn't have. I really overstepped there because I'm just an interviewee, and they're like, that's not the car you're talking about. So the SLR, it's a million-dollar vehicle, make sure it's enclosed, make sure it's got proper insurance. And she essentially blew me off. So I ended up getting a call a week later. I got the job. I start, and I go over to her desk. I want to see what happened, and she wasn't there. So I asked my now boss, who again, John and I at that time didn't like each other, like, what happened? So he finally sat me down. He's like, here's the whole reason you got hired. You were right. They moved out on an open transport, and the upper hydraulic failed and crashed out on top of the vehicle. It was a $175,000 damage claim. And the carrier only had $150,000 in cargo insurance. Well, if you work in the brokerage world, if you hired that carrier, who's on the hook for that extra $25,000? You are. And so that 3 to 5 seconds of me saying, that's not the right picture, make sure you gotta do the right thing, would have saved them $25,000. So when the COO heard about that, he's like, find that kid, hire him. Whoever you hired, fire them and hire that kid.
Got it.
And that's how I got in logistics. So
I love it. All right. So your first boss was somebody you hated. Because I was going to say, I'm pretty sure I know why you left the first job. Yeah.
We actually left because in the summer of 2008, there was massive flooding in Cedar Rapids, and it actually exposed some pretty shaky financials that we had. Our business was down for 2 days, and that 2 days turned into, that was June of 2008. And August 6th of 2008, our CEO pulled up in his Ferrari, walked into the temporary location we were at, told everybody he had 3 hours to get your stuff and get out. And by the way, we don't have enough money to cover payroll. He hasn't worked for free for the last 2 weeks. So that's why I left that job. Now, I saw that coming. So I was part of a group that very quickly got absorbed by CRST. Probably about 2/3 of the staff got absorbed by CRST, large carrier in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. And that's really where I started to learn like freight, like not just, general trucking. So like I learned freight at CRST. I worked on the asset side. So I was a fleet manager. I worked a bunch of different stuff there. It's funny. You asked a question about me hating that boss. So once John and I got to know each other, we liked each other a lot. The issue was this is I played at a high school that was notorious for having a very bad soccer team. My senior year, we got destroyed by his team, and to their credit, eventual state champions, I didn't feel bad about it. But it was, we ended up going 8-8 and we came within one game of the state tournament, losing to them again. And my high school has never had a losing season since. So going on, this will be year 24, hopefully. Go Prairie Hawks. But so like we had this stigma about it. So he's like, you were just some one trick pony. Like you were fast. I'm like, well, a little more than that. I played in college and did play a little bit after that. So like, wasn't just a one trick pony, my guy. So once we got to know each other, we actually got along really, really well. And he liked my way of doing operations because I was just incredibly thorough. And to the point that like, I would be in the office at 7 PM, everyone's leaving. I'm like, no, we still have like stuff we have to get done for this client. And that was at that time, Express Auto's largest client, the Odessa Auction House. So we ended up getting along great. We still chat every now and then to this day.
If you guys are playing FIFA, who's going to win?
We're playing FIFA, probably him, because I'm not as dexterous as I used to be. If we're on the pitch, you never know. I mean, he's still pretty skinny. I mean, I can throw my weight around pretty well. I'm pretty nimble for a big guy, so we'll see.
Gotcha. All right, so fast forward. I know you spent time, correct me if I'm wrong, Uber Freight, Carrier Direct, which became Metaphora. Now you're at, remind me, JLC?
JLCS, correct.
JLCS, okay. Talk about this, because you went from the carrier ops side really into more technical or tech-focused connectivity. Is that right?
Correct. So, as I look at the journey, I got very interested in just drivers in general. And so all this kind of stems back to this. Living in Iowa, you recognize a couple of things. If you've ever seen the Iowa Hawkeyes, they've got a sticker on their helmet that says ANF, America Needs Farmers, which is true. America does need farmers. ANT, America also needs truckers. And so I recognized that fairly early in my career, is that you have to take care of truckers because, and you have to take care of farmers as well. Those two things go away, the entire economy shuts down in a couple of days. Everything goes away. I had no desire to work a farm. I like being on them, but I didn't want to work on it. But I'm like, I can impact the American professional driver if I can start to make an impact in the industry. And so I kind of, in the back of my head, decided I was going to do this as a career, even though I still wasn't really sure. I started getting on the tech side because what I recognized as I got deeper and deeper in the space is there is a lot of wasted motion across the supply chain. Here's what I mean by that. you may have a transaction that goes on. You have a shipment that moves from Chicago to Atlanta, and there might be 7 to 8 intermediaries in there between the manufacturer of the widget and the carrier that is moving that from Chicago to Atlanta. And everybody's taking their piece in there, right? And I don't begrudge that, because I mean, with deregulation, that it brought a lot of opportunity to people in the industry, and opened the industry to a lot of folks that otherwise would not have been able to get in. But what it's done is it's creating these extra layers, this extra motion that ultimately takes from the American professional driver. And so what I wanted to do is I wanted to be around forward-thinking leaders, people that wanted to implement technology, get rid of some of these unnecessary layers, and ultimately, you know, try to take that money and get it back into driver pockets. You hear all these different things about like driver shortages and driver utilization, and okay, ultimately, like, what attracts young people to work? Can I make a good living? Can I see my family? Can I do stuff that's interesting? And, you know, can I do something that's worthwhile for me? There's other things too, but those four things are usually going to hit it, right? And for a while, like, the can I make a living wage truckers, it was tough. It's still tough. And so ultimately, again, that money that is at the very top of that food chain, if you take out these layers that are ultimately redundant and are unnecessary, and you know, there's a whole debate on what ones are and aren't, but technology is going to help that, then you can start to improve that quality of life for professional drivers. And then you can start to take that technology and you can start to leverage that into a younger population that is used to technology and everything they do, and start attracting young people to the professional driving realm. It's still a challenge with the age requirements. That's a whole different issue. But if they know that they can leverage this experience they have, you know, being in a connected generation, because really truckers used to be, hey, you get behind the wheel and you drive. Now there's a whole different plethora of things that are available to these individuals. And so it was multi-fold, where I wanted to get more money in their pockets, but I also wanted to create a situation where drivers can, or young people are attracted to the industry, because ultimately you need to have drivers. Will there be a place for autonomous? Absolutely. Do I think we'll get to level 5? Probably not. Not in our lifetime. But again, you're still going to have professional drivers in the industry on some level. And the reality is we do have an aging driver population. So how do we fix that? You bring young people in. So it's kind of a long-winded way of saying that.
No, I loved it. And this is an insider's take. And I think you did an amazing job of avoiding the trope that, oh, drivers aren't tech conscious. Drivers don't like technology, right? And I think it's the craziest thing in the world. The first people to live in tiny homes, the first people to have remote offices, they were truckers. It's not that drivers don't like technology. My experience says it's drivers don't like technology that doesn't work, or technology that complicates their life. So, you know, you taking the standpoint of, look, we're going to make stuff easier for you. It's just an awesome approach, man. What have you learned along the way?
So I learned a few things. One, that to your point, drivers are not as resistant as people think they are. I've also learned that the general motoring public wants everything on a truck, but doesn't want to deal with trucks. And so that's a whole different conversation to have around why it is so important to supply chain logistics, trucking, transportation. I think 2020 really showed people that, just again, you know, supply chain issues, all the things that went on. But the other thing I've learned too, is that no matter what you do, this industry never goes away, because you can't email a pallet. And so it is something that can become generational. And I think that's awesome. And I think that there's few industries that can truly say, like, almost no matter what, this will be a generation, potentially a generational industry. And that's something that to me is important, just kind of how I was raised in my family. And so I had this thing would be really cool, because my children have watched me now build a career over the last almost 20 years, and they recognize and are starting to see the different benefits of what dad's done. For instance, you know, my granddaughter was born 6 weeks ago today.
Congrats.
Thank you. My part was easy. I just made sure the kid didn't die. and then she got pregnant. But what's been really cool is that they've experienced now, like, my network being as excited for this as I am. And so free stuff shows up at our house, you know, free to the baby, obviously. And so, like, well, what is this? Like, this is my friends. Like, I put out your Amazon wish list for the baby, put it on my LinkedIn, boom, people were super nice and very, very generous. We got customized, you know, onesies and hoodies. I can't say enough of my friends at Capital Logistics, who mean, they did an embroidered hoodie for my granddaughter. Like, it's one thing to do a screen print, but do an embroidered hoodie, like, that's a whole different animal. And they're not doing it for their, you know, their most of their employees, but they did that. It was a 12-month size hoodie. So come this winter, Violet's all set. I'm like, that's super cool. And my kids got to watch and experience that.
That's cool. That's actually one of my favorite parts of the industry is, like, you know, it's, I make the joke, it's the biggest small industry in the world. Everybody knows everybody. You're gonna cross paths with people again. And, you know, there's two ways to approach it, right? Like, you can say, I'm going to be everybody's competitor and I'm going to go win at all costs. Or you can walk in and say, how do we collaborate? And that latter group is way more fun in my mind anyway.
And they're winning right now. I think that's something that we've been talking about at GLCS a lot over the last few months, especially since I came on board, was collaboration is the name of 24. And I think Ed Burns put this out. You know, there's something about being friends with your competitors. And I took that. I was like, you know, you're right. But also, if you truly are a differentiator, like, I know Talon's got differentiation amongst their peers in the industry. I know we have differentiation as well. You no longer become competitors. You're complementers. You know, what you do is different than what I do, but both can help, you know, even the same client because of, again, this, what those expertises are. And so that's something that I think is really taking hold as, especially this generation. So that I say this, like, early 30s to mid 40s generation has kind of come up because we've all kind of grown up with some semblance of that. And that's one of the things I'm really excited about with the industry is that, hey, I'm going to play to my strengths, but also, like, I'm going to have a network of people that complement my strengths and turn me into a juggernaut and vice versa.
Tell me a little bit about what GLCS is doing. You know, if somebody calls you up, what are they calling? What are they asking for? How does your company operate? What do you do?
I mean, we're going to help you take over the world. That's the bottom line. World domination is something we care about. You know, what's funny is I make that joke sometimes. I have like a list of like 10 or 12 jokes I always just kind of have on tap ready to go. And that's one of them. And the first response I got from somebody at Manifest was, tech company, got it. I'm like, that's amazing. You've heard this so many times. But our focus has always been technology. We work in three pillars, which I think is interesting because I do a lot of things in threes. This kind of keeps my mind sane. The first one is managed IT services. So you can outsource part or all of your IT to us. And specifically, we work in the transportation, trucking, and supply chain spaces. That's it. So if you have an IT group of one and you need either a couple extra hours, a couple extra hands, or you need a full team to assist with a project, we're the folks for that. We also do application management services.
I'm sorry, man. Let me interrupt there. So, because I hear IT for trucking, that could mean, look, everything from we're going to set up your Gmail and ship out a new laptop for a new hire, through we're going to stitch together all of your solutions via APIs so that your TMS talks to your banking solution and automates the process of getting an accurate bill out. Where do you fall in that, or is it full scale?
Full scale. The more complex the operation is, typically the more it's in our wheelhouse. Our team, and I've mentioned, you know, my experience, you know, nearly 20 years in the space. I'm one of the least tenured people in transportation on our team. You know, we've got about 30 folks on the team. And I'll tell people this, I tell people this wherever I go. If you have a chance to talk to Nate Johnson, our CEO, he is quite possibly one of the best and brightest minds, in technology and transportation, both and separately and together, that I've ever met. He's absolutely astounding, but also one of the most down to earth, nicest guys you'll ever meet. So that's pillar one. Pillar two is our application management services. So this can be where we will help develop applications for you. We will help, to your point, stitch together items. This is usually a monthly service. Somebody will buy an allotment of hours, and again, this is supports their IT team. And then we have our consulting services, which, you know, when people think of consulting, that could be anything from organizational design, compensation design, scaling plans. It could be post-merger integration. Can also be pre-merger diligence. We work with a lot of different folks doing that. The majority of our work has been done on the transportation and trucking side, specifically the asset side of the business. My goal here coming on board is to help really balance out the portfolio with our 3PL offerings. We do work with 3PLs. We've done it, you know, for a long time. But again, that's not been our focus because we have so many folks that are so ingrained in the trucking space. We are Samsara's largest domestic integrator. We do a ton of work with Trimble and TMW, with McLeod. Again, I could list all the different partners. It's all on our website, but
course.
I mean, we do a lot of really, really cool stuff. It definitely falls in the category of our life is dope. We do dope shit.
Nice, love it. In terms, look, what haven't I asked you that I should have? When it comes to being a veteran for prepping for podcasts, I know you're the king of this. What haven't I asked you? What haven't I set you up with, man?
You know, that's a great question, man. I think what I love about this is it's very conversational. This is a couple of things that I think people need to understand when it comes to transportation. No one has it fully figured out. And it's kind of the podcast game too. No one has the full formula for this. Even Joe Rogan, people, they talk about his as the standard for shows, right? Because when you look at the contract, ball don't lie. But do you really want to sit for 4 hours and listen to the guy? Maybe you do, but it's not always optimal, right?
So I started this interview with a really stupid kind of goofball question about how much you bench. Where does like exercise and where does training fall into your career?
Well, let me start with this. So, my sports background, I played soccer my whole life, which people look at me and go, "There's no way." I was smaller then, but I discovered strength sports very, very early. I actually started watching World's Strongest Man on ESPN2 back in the day. With my dad, and I was probably 12, 13 years old. We used to watch old reruns of World's Strongest Man, followed by sumo wrestling. And I was enthralled with the concept of being strong. And I also knew that, talking to my dad, because my dad's a very well-balanced man, in some respects. And Bruce always told me, he's like, whatever you do in your professional life, if it's what you love, great. Understand that most people aren't going to do what they love. It's your kind of check. You might be really good at it, but it's not what you love. Find something outside of your home and outside of your office that you enjoy and you can be passionate about, because it will drive everything else in your life. And he forced me and my sisters to all pick something to go do that with. Initially it was soccer. And about 10 years ago, a little more than that, I was working out, because I started working out when I was in college. And I like the weight room, and this creepy old Russian dude sees me and bullies me into doing a powerlifting meet. And I fell in love with powerlifting at my first meet. And what it's translated to is, when I take time to really think about how I've gotten to the point that I'm at, because I'm not special in my mind, but if you look at against the breadth of humanity, sure, I am. But what I've done is I've been very, very consistent for the last 23 years, 24 years of training. I log my workouts. I am in the gym a minimum 3 times a week on some level. Sometimes it is literally just I get on the treadmill and I'm there for 20 minutes, but I check the box. I'm consistent doing something every single week. And what that's done is that is also then bred into my professional life, is I may not hit home runs every time, because you're not going to. That's just reality. But I'm consistent. I do the things every single day that allow me to have the flexibility in my schedule to do what I want, to be able to provide awesome solutions for my clients, to be able to provide value to the organizations that I'm a part of, and hopefully to provide value to the industry. And again, it's just being consistent every single time. And that consistency over time truly is a separator. And that's, I look at, there was a guy that I trained with when I first got into powerlifting. We were about the same weight. He was a little younger than I was. And he's still sitting about the same 1350 or 1400 pound total that we both had when we first started. My very first powerlifting meet, a total of 1300. I placed fourth out of five guys, and that was because one guy bombed out of the meet. So good for me. I've now joined a very select group of people that have, totaled over 2300, that have squatted over 1,000 pounds. But again, it's not because I'm special per se, because all I've done is I've done those little things every single day that no one wants to talk about. No one wants to, do back raises. No one wants to do heavy pickups with your squat, when there's no one around except for your coach. But I've done that work, and it's been able to reap the reward. And I've done that across my career, my personal branding, the training, my family. And I'll tell you what, man, it's led to a pretty awesome life.
Hey, listen, one of the final questions I ask every guest is, you walk into University of Iowa, you're talking to kids who are thinking about joining the supply chain, want to know more. What's the one piece of advice you hope they come away having learned from you or having taken from you?
This is regardless of getting to logistics. Logistics just happens to be the canvas that I found. But I'll tell you, it's an incredible one. To your point, it's the biggest small industry in the world. You can be connected to every major brand, to every continent, and in theory, to every person in the world, because all of us have things that have been manufactured, so therefore it's part of the supply chain. So to those that are thinking about getting in, do it. If nothing else, I feel it almost checks that box, kind of like being a server or like working retail. Like you'll learn certain things about yourself in those arenas, right? But having the stay power and just staying in the industry allows you a lot of freedom if you choose for it to. And again, I mentioned those kind of consistent things, and it allows you to find your voice. It allows you to find your story. And I think that, and tell your story, and ultimately to write your story. So when I look at this life overall, you know, and I ever want somebody to come away from a conversation with me of like, what could I do with myself? Take hold of the pen that writes your story and don't ever let go.
I love it. Robert Bain, if somebody wants to get in touch with you, where can they find you? Other than every podcast in America.
Yeah, you'll see me on the podcast.
Just log into Spotify and search his name. You can't miss him.
Just don't go for the there is a preacher named Robert Bain. He's interesting. He's an interesting guy. Just know that's out there too. But you can email me rbain@glcs.net. You can find me on LinkedIn, Robert Bain. Tagline is the strongest man in logistics. If you want to watch that strength journey, you can find me on Instagram at Bain316. Other than that, catch me around Des Plaines or at basically every conference this year too.
All right, brother, man. Thanks so much for being a guest on Hammer Down. And thank you, Mr. and Mrs. Listener. We appreciate all of you checking it out.